Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Last year, we won a Parsec Award with our short story, Under the Bed, by Michael Natale. That story was expertly narrated by New York Times best-selling author Michael A. Stackpole. I'm convinced that Mr. Stackpole's reading of that story helped it win the award. Now, we have him returning to Variant Frequencies, not as the narrator, but for something that he does even better, writing. We are continuing our Christmas theme just a bit longer with A Real Christmas by Michael A. Stackpole. I'm also excited about our narrator for the story. Some of you may be familiar with one of my favorite podcasts, Decoder Ring Theater. Well, we have the voice of Black Jack Justice, Christopher Mott. This very talented man from Toronto, Ontario, has a list of podcasting and professional theater so long that I can't list it all here. Chris has performed in Twelfth Night, Macbeth, King Lear, and many others. I think you're going to agree that the combination of Michael A. Stackpole's story and Christopher Mott's narration is a pretty wonderful last Christmas treat. Before we get into the story, we have a short message from our sponsor, and we will announce the winner of our Abney Park CD contest. Most of us now use a BlackBerry, iPhone, or Palm to check email when we're out of the office. But it's not enough. You need access to the files and programs on your office computer. GoToMyPC is the tool that will give you complete access to everything on your computer from anywhere. For you Macintosh users, GoToMyPC currently has a Mac beta. Just go to their site and follow the GoToMyPC for Mac beta link. With GoToMyPC, you're actually operating your computer from any other computer. Access your programs, files, everything you need to work from anywhere. All you need is an internet connection. Our listeners can try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited remote access free. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free trial. In December of 2009, we ran The Failed Cities Hath a Darkness by Matt Wallace. Along with that series, we had a contest for one lucky listener to win Abney Park's new CD, Aether Shanties. To enter the contest, we asked listeners to send me an email telling me who your favorite character was from The Failed Cities. I wasn't surprised that by far the most popular character from The Failed Cities is Truck. I have to admit, he's my favorite too. Ian's performance of that character was just awesome. We randomly picked the winner from all of the entries. Interestingly, the winner didn't pick Truck as his favorite. In fact, he picked Stern and Constable Clemenko. Those two wonderful characters were read by Tom Devo Spice Rockwell and Anton Buntik. Our winner is Chris Bozeman. Congratulations, Chris. We will be sending you Aether Shanties, Further Trials and Tribulations of Abney Park. This CD is signed by every member of the band. Now, on to our story. A Real Christmas by Michael A. Stackpole. It's Christmas Eve. Private Detective Dan Taylor is contemplating his past and his future. Or lack of one. Then a potential client comes to his door.
Christmas Eve. I sat there staring at a half-empty whiskey bottle, strains of jingle bells leaking in from the street. Till that moment, I'd never been able to figure out how suicides did it during the holidays. Things were just too beautiful. Outside, beyond the frosted windows and dusty Venetian blinds, big fat snowflakes drifted down soft and slow, as if the gray clouds were torn pillows spilling out feathers. Colored lights spiraled up lampposts and across the street on wires buried inside evergreen garlands. Fat men in red suits rang bells and laughed beside charity kettles. People infected with the spirit of the season dumped money into the pots. Even over the past couple of years, while things were going from bad to worse, I'd stayed in the spirit. Christmas was a happy time. Sure, in my game it was a lean time. Fewer spouses wanting me to dig up the skinny on errant mates, but I didn't mind too much. It gave me time to be with my family. Things never seemed bad enough to blot out the joy of a family Christmas. I started to pour another slug of whiskey into the glass, but it was dirty. Too dirty. I drank straight from the bottle. My mouth and throat were already numb. The whiskey should put out the fire in my belly. Now all I felt was cold and hollow inside. Put the bottle back down. And I picked up a 10mm bullet. Do it, I begged myself. Do it and there won't be any more hurting. Looking at that bullet, knowing it was going to be my last meal, I finally got it. Suicides kill themselves during the holiday season because it's a time for reflection. You look back over the year and see all the things you've done, all the things you failed to do. You see all the people you've helped and all the people who helped you. And you see all the people you've hurt. You see you can't never make it right again. When Sandy left me last February, I couldn't see how she could have gone. Gone and taken Stevie with her. Now I wondered why she hadn't gone to live with her folks in Phoenix earlier. Ever since Eric Carter framed me and got me chucked off the force, I'd been spiraling down like a burning fighter plane. She put up with me crawling inside a bottle for 2 years. She was a saint. Taking Stevie and splitting reminded me she was too smart to be saddled with a dope like me. I'd let her down. I'd let Stevie down, too. He was a good kid, only 7, but he understood things. He never asked for much. He didn't complain when I forgot his birthday. Even the last time we talked on Thanksgiving, he'd been excited and happy. Made me promise I'd be having turkey later that day. Broke my heart to tell him there was no way I could possibly make it down to Arizona for Christmas. He said he understood. I let myself believe it. Then Sandy sent me a copy of the letter Stevie'd mailed to Santa. It was in his handwriting. He tried to be careful, but was sloppy in places. Came complete with a note from Sandy saying she could understand the lack of payments and a missed birthday, but that I'd better start being the sort of father Stevie deserved. She circled one item on the list, a PlayStation 3, and she left a message on my machine. She let me know I'd better come through for him. But I hadn't. I picked up the clip and fed the bullet into it, topping the magazine off at 9. I'd only need one. But I wanted the rest just in case I didn't do it right the first time. On the bottom of Stevie's list for Santa, he'd written, "And something for my dad so he can come here and we can have a real Christmas." A hollow inside me took a big bite of my heart. Anyone who disappoint a kid like that didn't deserve to live. Stevie still saw me as some sort of knight in shining armor, but everyone else saw the real me. I was the grubby dick who took grainy pictures of cheating spouses. I dug up dirt on accident victims so insurance companies could gyp them. I made my living making others miserable. I'd started at home. I slid the clip into the pistol's grip and slammed it home with the heel of my hand. Pulled the slide back, checking around in the chamber. I knew how to do it. Gun in the mouth, as far as the muzzle would go. Blow my brainstem apart. No chance of some doctor stitching me up like a zombie. Not that anyone would notice. At least the last thing I did would be done right. I hesitated. Maybe if I manufactured a case file, I could make it look like I'd gotten dirt on Carter. The cops would figure out that slime ball off me, making it look like a suicide. They might not be able to put him in jail for it, but they'd rule my death a homicide. My family could get my life insurance. I'd buy Stevie lots of PlayStation stuff. I dug for a new file to start working. And saw the overdue statement from the insurance company. I'd missed 2 payments. third was due 2 weeks ago. I shook my head. I'd even screwed up my only chance to give my kids something good. As I picked up my gun again, the door to my office opened. First, I only saw the man in silhouette. I started to laugh. He was a rotund little man with a thick beard and a pipe. His hair looked long, and as he came within the pale circle of light cast by my desk lamp, I saw both it and the beard were snow white. He wore a conservatively cut business suit tailored to look good on a fat man. The clothes were charcoal gray, but he should have been in red. Same rosy color as his cheeks. He draped a dark overcoat across his left forearm and held a snow-dusted Homburg in his left hand. "Go away, I'm not buying." I jerked a thumb at the street below where his clones rang their bells. I gave on the street. My hostility set him back a half step, but didn't confuse him. "I'm not selling anything, Mr. Taylor. I came to retain your services." "What's the matter? Someone deer nap, dancer, and prancer?" I let the sneer on my face slide through the words like a razor. "How dare this breathing ad for Christmas walk into my life when I want to end it?" The old man smiled. "It's Prancer." "Someone kidnapped Prancer?" I frowned. "The makeup is good, but if you're going to tell me you're Santa Claus, I won't find it funny." He drew his pipe from his mouth and tapped it out into the ashtray on my desk. "Don't smoke myself. I keep the relic around because I once used it to lay out an angry husband." The man looked up at me. "Do you mind if I smoke?" Feeling annoyed and contrary, I shook my head. "I mind." He sighed. "Nasty habit, I know. The wife won't let me smoke at home either." "Yeah, I'm sure that's wearing on domestic bliss. What's it to me?" I folded my hands behind my head. "Cut to the chase, eh, pal?" He extended his hand to me. "Claude Nichols, glad to make your acquaintance." Right off, I pegged this guy as one of those irritating old geezers who would do things at his own pace no matter how rude I got. In my foul mood, I almost didn't shake his hand. But there's enough of the old school in me that I feel bad when I don't. I figured the sooner he got through his story, the sooner I could get him out of my office and kill myself. If proper introductions would get things rolling, I'd go along. "Dan Taylor, what do you want? It's Christmas Eve, you know." "Oh, I know, I know." I didn't expect such a firm grip from the old man. As his hand enfolded mine, his dark eyes glittered. The frigid void inside me collapsed. In a half second, all the alcohol in me burned up. A hot flash shoved a flush onto my face. There had been something very important for me to do, something I had to do immediately, but I couldn't remember what it was. It felt weird. It was his fault. I jerked my hand out of his. "Who the hell are you?" He ignored my question. "I've been working as a Santa down at the Macy's on Church Street. They do up a nice setting with lights and everything. They even hired some youngsters to be elves with pointed ears and all. The elf working with me was a kid about 13 years old. He was small for his age and hasn't got any parents." I shrugged. "Makes his gift shopping easier, doesn't it?" "That's one way of looking at it." "What's he to you?" The old man looked away. "I got to know him and found out he'd have nowhere to be on Christmas. My wife and I invited him to join us for the holiday. We were going to have him sleep over and then open presents in the morning." He met my stare again. "The wife and I never had children, so this was going to be special for us. He was supposed to meet me at 6 tonight at the store, but he wasn't there. I think something has happened to him."
"Tell it to the cops."
"Oh, I did, but they said they couldn't do anything for 3 days. I've got to find him tonight. A Lieutenant O'Malley was his name. He suggested I come here and talk to you. He said you'd not have anything else to do."
That remark started tearing away at me. The old man saw my hurt and started to reach out to pat my hand, but I waved him off. "I had it coming. O'Malley's a bastard. Santa'll be giving him a lump of coal in his stocking. I still don't want the job." The old man moved faster than I figured possible. He grabbed my left wrist, sending another electric jolt through me.
"But, Mr. Taylor, I need your help to do this job for me."
Nichols smiled nicely, and I realized he was just a nice old man who was worried about a nice kid he'd met. Hell, I didn't have anything else to do. Maybe my brain felt foggy, but turning down a job wasn't good for the bottom line.
This kid got a name?
Noden.
He let my wrist go. After digging around in his jacket pocket for a moment, he handed me a black and white photo.
This is what he looks like.
Picture looked less like a Santa and elf picture than it did one of those see-me-shaking-the-president's-hand photos that politicos plaster all over their walls. Noden was there, pointy ears and Robin Hood hat. Looked like a sharp kid, one adventurous enough to get himself in trouble. And if he wandered the streets dressed in his work clothes, I could guarantee he'd be in trouble. He's about 5 feet tall, right? Nichols smiled sheepishly.
Shorter. He was standing on a box. He's a bit over 4 feet.
Should have been a dwarf, not an elf. I made a note on the back of the picture. You got any idea where he might be? Again, Nichols broke eye contact.
The store has a warehouse down near Lake Street, between Ferguson and Cherry Blossom. He was supposed to help load some last-minute things on a truck for the late shoppers, then meet me. That's where I'd start.
Okay. I said that word slowly, letting him know I figured out something was up. But I wasn't going to ask questions. Carter had his headquarters in a warehouse down there, near that big boreal transport complex. If nothing else, my search would allow me to look into Carter. I'd give him some seasonal cheer. I'll go looking for him. No promises. Give me a number where I can reach you.
Oh, no.
What? He held his hands up.
Look, I haven't told my wife that Noden's missing. I called her and said we were going to do some last-minute shopping, and we might be home late. We're planning on going to the Vigil Mass, so we've got until midnight to find him. While you're out looking, I'll be looking too. Just find him and get him here by midnight. I'll meet you then.
I frowned. What if you find him first? I'll be freezing my ass off on a wild goose chase.
I'll leave a message on your machine.
He saw me shake my head and he looked around the room. He saw the remains of an old one in a pile beneath a dent on the far wall.
Look, just be back here by midnight. I'll pay for your time.
I stood and tucked the pistol into my shoulder holster. Midnight, okay. I'll be here. Pulled on a black leather jacket. Don't worry about the money. This one's a freebie. Nichols looked at me kind of queer.
But O'Malley said...
O'Malley's left fingerprints on every penny he's ever had. I opened a drawer and pocketed my wallet. 'Tis the season, right? No charge. My old Impala started on the first turn of the key. I headed it out of the alley behind my building. Flicked on the heater, which made the car a warm cocoon in the heart of the dark winter night. Snow still drifted down, lightly dusting everything. I knew that the city would be a picture postcard perfect Christmas morning. I drove down the hill towards the warehouse district. Shipping on the lake had once been big business, including the transport of bootleg hooch from Canada down to New York City and Boston. After the war on the interstates, trucking companies took over the abandoned lakefront warehouses. Illegal goods still moved through the area, but most of them ended up doing time in Eric Carter's Crystal Trucking Warehouse. I'd be proud to say I didn't like Eric Carter because he's a scumbucket drug dealer. The truth is, our mutual hatred runs deeper than that. I've wanted to tangle with him just to watch him spit out bloody teeth. Sandy used to call it that alpha male thing. I'm not too clear what that means. I just know that whenever I saw him, I wanted to smack him upside the head to prove once and for all I was tougher and meaner than him. I did a quick circuit of the Macy's warehouse, but didn't see anything out of the ordinary. The place was lit up real good, so there wasn't really any places to hide. If Noden was still there, he was inside, so he'd call Nichols or something, case solved. Didn't matter. I had a hunch he wasn't there. I continued on past Boreal's concertina wire-topped cinderblock wall and parked in the shadow of Carter's Crystal Warehouse. Lucky for me, Carter tended to keep his area dark. Anyone watching them load a truck would have a tough time figuring out what they were moving. Shedding a little light on the situation would get Carter in deep trouble, like the time I lit his dumpster on fire. That trouble rebounded on me. Got really deep. Carter's lawyer insulated him from any involvement with the stolen goods they were loading out. I didn't help myself none. I told Carter he was dirty. I said I'd be on his ass until kingdom come. He fixed me. He managed to show I'd been regularly taking payoffs. The department offered me the opportunity to resign or do time. I resigned. And life went into the sewer. I disabled the car's dome light and got out. It didn't shut the door. The noise might alert someone to my being there.
I neared the loading docks and realized terrorists could have been attacking and no one would have heard. Inside, it sounded like an out-of-control Christmas party. Throwing the automatic, I slipped through the heavy plastic strip curtain in the loading bay and kept to the shadows. I could not believe what I saw. Four men, burly types with no necks, danced around the office in the middle of the warehouse. They threw sheets of paper up in the air like confetti, laughing all crazy. They returned to the aft end of a color copier and harvested more. Behind them in the office itself, Carter sat at a desk, closely inspecting one of those sheets. The copier's front panel had been pulled off. Two sets of thick wires ran from the copier's guts to a black box. Noten, or someone who looked a lot like his picture, sat cross-legged in front of the box. He was using a long screwdriver to fiddle around with its innards, and a big grin on his face. It grew broader with each delighted shriek by one of the prancing linebackers. The kid was beaming. Two sheets floated down near me. I scooped them up. No one really noticed. The second I touched them, I knew something was up. The paper felt familiar, but all wrong for a Xerox. Then I looked at the images and started to feel queasy. Reproduced perfectly in green, gray, and those new colors, Ben Franklin looked up from beneath a banner that read, Federal Reserve Note. The three bills on the sheet had consecutive serial numbers. The paper felt like the real article. I fished the lone bill from my wallet. Mine had the father of our country on it, but to touch, they were the same. The C-notes even had the little plastic thread running through them. I looked at the second sheet. Thought it was the same as the first, but then I spotted the difference. The second sheet had serial numbers in sequence, too, but they weren't the same as on the first. Somehow Carter was printing different serial numbers, and from someplace he was getting mint paper. I watched for a minute more just to reassure myself that no one else was hiding around the warehouse. During that time, one of the guys reloaded the machine with paper. It looked like regular copier stock. Carter came out of his office to say something to Noden. The elf nodded, played with the box, and Carter pulled the next copy out of the machine. He looked at it and gave Noden a smile. The elf glowed. All sorts of ideas started to percolate through my mind. I kept seeing Mr. Nichols and hearing a concern in his voice for Noden. Wild ideas are coming from the whiskey, I told myself, even though I was more sober now than I'd been in months. Just do the job and get out of here. I stuffed the Xerox bills inside my jacket and stepped out from my hiding place. By the time I'd reached the edge of the paper blizzard, only Noden had noticed me. He smiled innocently and returned to his tinkering. Finally, one of the thugs saw me and stopped his frolicking. The others settled down very quickly, too. I kept the gun on them, and they decided not to test Carter's sick leave policy. Carter finally looked up, and I gave him a big smile. What the hell are you doing here, Danny boy? Motel keyholes iced over? Your little friend, he's got a date. I'm his ride. I motioned with the pistol's muzzle. Keep your hands where I can see them. Carter kept his hands in the open, spreading the fake bills in a fan. You can't take Noden, he pointed to the copier. Have you seen what he's done to the Xeroxer? Noden smiled openly. I fix it. English clearly was not Noden's first language. I couldn't place his accent for all the tea in China. Noden looked straight at my gun without fear in his big evergreen eyes. He watched it and me with curiosity and innocence. Carter nodded toward Noden. Yeah, you fixed it. Fixed it perfect. Taylor, this thing is spitting out C-notes on mint stock with individual serial numbers, but we're using three originals and normal Xerox paper. You can't take him. Carter held out the bills toward me. You and I might hate each other, but don't let's be stupid. I give you enough of this stuff so you can get out of town. I'll give you real cash. You can start up a business. You can go to Phoenix. You can be with your wife and kid again. Hell, I'll even slip the DA evidence that you were framed. Don't kill the goose. Carter's words dripped into my brain like cold honey. He knew where Sandy and Stevie lived. He could get to them. Fear shocked me. The bribe just pissed me off. Get bent, Carter. I can't be bought. He tossed his head back and laughed harshly. Can't be bought! You! You're the guy who rakes through dead people's lives so insurance companies can screw the survivors. You're the guy who's a paid peeping Tom. I saw in the papers how you helped a preacher beef up his security so families couldn't free their children from his cult.
His men laughed too. Laughed at me. I wasn't any white knight. I stank. Not because of the whiskey. Not because I'd worn the same clothes for 3 days. The stink came from a rot in my soul. Carter sneered. You can be bought, Taylor. You've been bought and sold more times than you can count. Now I'll buy you. I'll give you more than you deserve. I'll even give you more than you think you're worth. Tried to hide the pain. You're wasting words. I'm talking sense. You're a fool. You think I'm going to let you take Noden? No way. I'm going to wrap you up in a pine box. I'm going to give your ex-family a real Christmas surprise. Real Christmas. Those were the words my son used in his letter to Santa. That's what Stevie really wanted. All Carter and I were going to give him is a dead dad. Things started oozing up in my memory. I let them all go, except how much I hated Carter. My eyes narrowed. Put a razor edge in my voice. I think this lump of steel in my hand is a tad more deadly than the paper you're holding. You and your boys may all be packing, but I guarantee you die first, Carter. Big hole, very wet. I looked down at the elf. Come on, Noden. Mr. Nichols sent me to find you. At the mention of Mr. Nichols' name, Odin jumped up and gave Carter a sheepish grin. Grabbed Noden's upper arm, then pumped 2 rounds through the black box. Carter and his thugs scattered from the first thunder of the gun. I shifted aim and blew another pair of shots through the fuse box on the wall. It erupted in sparks like a volcano, then darkness filled the warehouse. I pulled Noden along as I backed out of the building. He had his hands clapped over his ears. He came without a struggle, but outside, on the loading dock, he pulled away from me. He did it easily. He had lots more strength than I thought possible for his size. His eyes blazed with green fury. Why you break it? I heard the hurt in his voice. It matched a chord thrumming through my own chest. I almost barked at him, but I stopped. I knew he wouldn't understand. We had to get out of there quickly, so I lunged forward, took a hold of his right ear and twisted. Part of me prayed the pointy end wouldn't come off. It didn't. Noden cried out in pain. Why you break copier? My achy guts coiled around my heart and squeezed. I knew what was going on, but it couldn't be. It was impossible. But it was happening, and I had to explain things to Noden in words he'd understand. I swallowed hard. Had to. They were naughty. In an instant, understanding flashed through his eyes. I let him go. Running faster than his little legs should have been able to carry him, Noden followed me into the night. Claude Nichols looked surprised as I led Noden across the empty boreal transport warehouse floor to the sleigh. He left off adjusting one of the reindeer harnesses and thoughtfully stroked his beard. Well, Mr. Taylor, I didn't expect to see you so soon. Certainly not here. I deliver. No extra charge, all part of the service. I opened my arms wide, the gun again in hand. Quite an operation you got here. I know Noden's not a kid from the store. Some things are starting to click together. You fit all the stuff from the warehouse into those sacks? Nichols glanced back at the sleigh, then puffed on his pipe and casually blew a smoke ring. The warehouse holds enough for 2 trips. It serves Eastern Canada and New England. About 10 years ago, we took a look at transportation and decided regional distribution centers were a good idea. It saves time and problems with authorities. The Patriot Act and all, you know. He glanced at the elf, furrowing his brows. But he looked more amused than angry. Noden works in research and development. He decided to see what the real world was like and stowed away on the last shipment here yesterday. Didn't notice he was missing until this morning and finally determined he had to be in the area. He glanced at his watch. You do realize I've got a busy schedule. I have to be leaving now. No, I shook my head. Not until you've answered a couple of questions. I let every ounce of anger and frustration pour into my words. I wanted to lash with them. What gave you the right to do that to me? He pulled his head back, but an amused light still danced in his eyes. Do what to you?
I asked you for your help. You made me help you. You stole my mind, my will. Oh, you mean I stole your suicide from you? He folded his hands across his ample, scarlet-swathed waist. Is that all that's bothering you? Damn you! I thumped my chest with a fist. It's my right to kill myself. I can end my pain if I want to. You had no right taking that from me. His eyes sharpened. He drew the pipe from his mouth. Oh, I beg to differ with you, Mr. Taylor. If I stole anything, I stole the arrogance and selfishness you suicides use to cloak yourself before you do it. You dare believe all you're doing is ending your own pain, but that's not true. What you're really doing is transferring it, giving it all wet and bloody and raw to those who love you. If, in this season, I set myself up as the arbiter of what I allow to be given as gifts, I think I've earned that right. His words blew through me like shrapnel. They blasted apart the air of the wounded pride armoring my heart. Scenes from the Christmas that would have been flashed before me. A questioning expression on Stevie's face as his mother took a call from O'Malley. Stevie's blank stare as he looked down into my grave. I saw the tears he'd hide from his mother. Felt the tight ache in his chest. I heard him asking himself what he did wrong to make me blow my brains out. I sagged to my knees and wrapped my arms around my throbbing guts. Why'd you pick me? Hot tears splashed. You figured I was too dumb to make out who you were? Did you plan on no one believing me if I did? He shook his head. I chose you because I could give you something. What? All I wanted was to die. Claude Nichols gave me a quizzical smile. It's not always about what you want, Mr. Taylor. It's about what you need. Merry Christmas, and thank you. I couldn't account for the hours between midnight and 9 a.m. or how I got back to my office. The loss of time didn't surprise me. I was used to blackouts. It reeked of whiskey. I didn't feel drunk, just drained. I didn't remember leaving the warehouse, getting across town, or walking up three flights to the office. I didn't even remember opening the door and trudging to my desk, but somehow that's where I found myself. Something was different, and I noticed immediately. There, on the corner of the desk, sat a new answering machine with a big red felt bow on top of it. Great, I thought. I snatch a counterfeiting elf from a crime boss and I get an answering machine. Yeah, merry damn Christmas. The little red light on the machine was blinking. I punched the play button.
Yeah, Taylor, this is Lieutenant O'Malley. The Treasury boys want me to thank you for the tip about Carter's counterfeiting. They got enough bogus $100 bills with his fingerprints to put him away for a long vacation. He's going for an insanity defense. Claims an elf fixed the machine for him. Too much eggnog, if you ask me. Oh, and if I ever figure out how you got that lump of coal into my stocking, your history.
I'd forgotten about the Xeroxes I still had. I reached into my jacket to pull them out, but they weren't there. In their place was an airline ticket to Phoenix. The ticket had been billed to Boreal Transport's account. The flight was taking off in 3 hours. Another voice came through the machine speaker.
Dad! Dad, this is Stevie. Santa came at everything. He ate the cookies and drank the milk we left out for him. And Dad, the PlayStation 3, it's great! How'd you know? It's just what I wanted. And Grandma and Grandpa are gonna hold dinner. Mom and me'll get you at the airport. It'll be a real Christmas!
Nichols' comment slammed home. The answering machine was what I needed. Me. I was what Stevie needed. And I needed him too. I looked up and wasn't surprised to see a new suitcase with a bow on the handle hidden behind the door. He'd thought of everything. No one would believe me if I tried to tell them what really happened. It didn't matter. I had a plane to catch.
The Thank you for listening to A Real Christmas by Michael A. Stackpole, narrated by Christopher Mott. Music was provided by Digital Deuce, and some of it created with Apple's GarageBand. Michael A. Stackpole's website is at stormwolf.com. You can hear other great performances by Christopher Mott at decoderringtheater.com. Digital Juice is at digitaljuice.com. Thank you from all of us at Variant Frequencies.
Off the coast of Nova Scotia, on a remote island, a lonely scientist, a powerful computer, a simple mistake, unleashes a new threat somewhere in the hills of Margaree.
Everyone makes mistakes. Some are small. Some are bigger. My father's mistake, born of an innocent heart fueled by sadness, was the greatest mistake. Some thought the death of his little girl drove him to the point of insanity. Some thought he was trying to be God. But this is not how it happened. He wanted to save me, to give me life. And in doing so, everyone was doomed.
Dead Hunt, a Ken Crawford podcast novel. The horror begins March 2010. Visit us online at deadhunt.kencrawford.com.
Immortality, longevity, an endless lifespan. What would you do to become immortal?
My name is McAllen Orsel. I'm a genetic scientist in New York. I'm caught in a secret war between two powerful groups of immortals. I've been told that I am a messiah to a group of people I barely know. I'm forced on a quest around the globe to fulfill a destiny I never chose. If only I can stay alive.
From Krzysztof Lipucka comes The Leviathan Chronicles, an audio adventure like you've never heard before.
What is Leviathan?
We have been among you for almost a millennia.
What? Immortal?
They can't know about Leviathan.
Blow those charges.
No!
Get down!
Why have you brought me here?
You are here because we need your help.
She was never trained for this.
She was bred for it, Anton.
But she doesn't know that.
You'll need to find the team, McAllen.
To discover the Leviathan Chronicles and get the next dimension in podcasting, go to www.leviathanchronicles.com.